11 o'clock on your Friday morning. Welcome in. It is the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs. Tyler, Wes, and Chris along with you here on the game, wrapping up another week. A lot to get into, some football conversation stemming from what Coach Beamer talked about at Welcome Home last night. Also, unfortunately, some not-so-fun things to talk about when it comes to both the baseball and softball diamonds. Between the 12 combined innings softball and baseball played last night, how many did y'all end up making it through?
Be just completely honest, I didn't see any of the baseball game.
Fair.
I did. I had something else going on, but I was tracking and following the softball game and watched it here and there, but was tracking it when I could. But not obviously the best game for South Carolina softball yesterday. It got away from them. But I don't even think we can talk about them in the same sentence
at this point. Not at all. And, Chris, we knew going into this tournament that South Carolina was playing for the opportunity to improve their seeding. We know they're going to be in the NCAA tournament likely as a top 10 seed. We'll see if they can maybe make their way into that top 8. Last night sucks. You never want to lose, especially in that fashion with the mistakes they made on the field and stuff like that. But they're fine. They still got a lot more softball to play. And, again, we were just kind of seeing how deep they were going to go in this thing. We'll get to baseball in a minute, but it is, like Wes said, a 180-degree difference between these two teams.
Yeah, like a disappointing game within the structure of a very good season, right? And, just look at the difference, right? The softball team, yes, they got knocked out. Yes, it was a tough game. You know, very uncharacteristic because you had five errors. You had a few other plays that didn't go down technically as errors, but were miscues, right? Might be the best words, where it's like a decision, there's an obstruction call, etc. And so the game ultimately gets away. We've seen this a few times with this team, but here's the difference, right? This team is a regional host and actually on the line as a top eight national host, right? And if you play baseball or softball as a sport, that is your goal. Like, what are we always talking about with the baseball team? You know, when they're good, when they've been good in the past, it's not just, hey, are you going to make the tournament? It's been, are you good enough to host? Are you good enough to be a top eight seed? So softball, to translate it to that sport, very similar, obviously. You're thinking in the same way. And you're making postseason play, you're hosting. Yeah, you're on the line. You might not get there, but regardless, you've got a chance to keep playing for a while. And it's been, you know, a disappointing game, yes, but it's in the course of what's been a great season for Ashley Chastain Woodard.
Well, as we talked about so many times, we've seen them have, you know, rough first games of series. Like last week against Alabama, got run ruled on Friday and went out there and won the final two games of that series and beat them, you know, just for good measure on Wednesday in their first game of the SEC tournament as well. So I don't think anybody's worried about them bouncing back. Once they get into the NCAA tournament, they'll find out Sunday what their draw is, who's coming here to Columbia, and what seed they end up getting. But, yeah, they'll be fine. No worries there. Same can't be said, unfortunately, for baseball. Look, we know they're not playing for anything. I laid out my goal yesterday is just don't go get embarrassed out there on the plains after getting drugged by a combined 30-3 on Sunday against Florida and 16 innings of work there. It got pretty bad. 24-2 last night, 7-run run rule. I didn't know there was anything lower than rock bottom, but we might be there.
I don't even know what to say at this point. Was not a math major, as I've said many times, but 54-5 combined over the last three games that you've played. And that actually just doesn't even feel like a real number, a real stat in baseball. Yep. You know, there's not a sport where that number would be good, but in baseball, certainly for a program with the history that South Carolina has, it's just almost unfathomable to me that you can get beat that badly three games in a row. And, you know, I think sometimes, sometimes in baseball you do have fluke games. You have games, too, where even the final score does not necessarily tell the story of a game. You'll have games where, frankly, teams will just punt the game halfway through, and they put in a pitcher that's not in their main sort of list of guys. And the final score, you even see it in MLB, the score, you know, sometimes they put a position player
the
in.
The center fielder comes in to pitch.
Yes, and you might look at the final score. You say, man, what happened? They don't care. And really, it's not even a big deal in the grand scheme. But when you have three games, you know, back to back to back, that you get beat just this handily. And it was, what, 12-1 after three?
Yep.
I think. So some of your main guys, obviously, are giving up lots of runs. You're not scoring runs. You know, the I believe one of those two runs came very, very late on a solo home run.
Yeah, I think Woyda, either Woyda, top of six or top of the seventh.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I'm not telling anybody anything they don't already know that's listening, but this is just, I just, Chris, I don't even know what you say, man.
Yeah, I mean, look, the numbers are incredibly ugly, and, you know, Jack Beltre led his story from Gamecock Central last night with just kind of a reminder of where we're at, you know, not to continue to pile on, but Sunday, just a few days ago, Carolina has its largest margin of defeat in a game since 97. That was the 22-3 loss to Florida. And we get, what, 4 days later, less than a week later, and the mark gets shattered again, you know, by losing 24-2. And, like, I had somebody, and Jack covers the baseball program a lot more closely than I do. I would say than any of us do. But I was asked this morning on the forums, like, how did it get this bad? And when it is this bad, like, I think it's always just a combination of things. And ultimately, the head coach is always responsible for where a program is. And I don't think anybody expected, nobody that I know that's reasonable came into this thing saying, all right, you know, hey, good season, not great season, good season last year, but not a season good enough to have Mark Kingston with his whole body of work keep his job. That maybe this should probably be a little bit better this year, and Paul Maneri's coming in. So the expectations weren't super high, but, I mean, it cannot be this bad. It's just unfathomable. Like, when you see these scores, and not just one score, to your point, Wes, if a game gets away from you, that happens to everybody. Everybody has some bad losses over the course of a season. Everybody pretty much has a game or two that just kind of the wheels come off. Or like you said, you kind of abort mission, you know, midway through if it's not going your way. But this is a situation where South Carolina's entire team and coaching staff should really be dialed in on trying to finish this thing strong, even though, like you said, Tyler, there's nothing left to play for other than the SEC tournament. And it just has gone – it's gotten worse. You know, and you compare it to, like, the basketball team from last season, right? Obviously a huge struggle last year. Obviously a lot that didn't go the team's way, but every single time you watched a game, like, I never watched the team and said, man, they're just not competing, right? And this, it just has a different feel here at the end of the season. And that's not making any type of, like, accusation or anything like that, but there doesn't seem to be, to me, y'all tell me if this is fair, it doesn't seem like there's as high of an engagement level, which makes sense. Things are going poorly, very poorly, but to go this badly, it's almost not, you're not just getting beat. It's like you're getting beat on the field, on the diamond. You're also getting beat, like, emotionally, you know, it seems like. And it's just hard to fathom how we've gotten here.
Yeah, and like I said, I did not watch the game yesterday. So
you didn't miss much.
I'm not going to judge the body language and all that, but you look at the results, and I do think baseball is a game because of the way it's structured. If you know, you see, that team quit, and sometimes it's, well, a pitcher had a terrible outing. You know, it's a game where it's kind of unlike any other, just in terms of, like, you know, if the bats are quiet on a certain day, then you know, Like if you let's say you score two runs in a game, sometimes you get a great pitching outing,
sure,
and you win that game 2-1, and everybody says, "Well, that was a well played game, and we won the game." And then other times, you know, you have to score 8 runns, and you win 8-7, and the pitching was terrible, maybe, but you still won the game, and everybody's like, "Oh yeah, you found a way to win." Well, when you're not getting production at the plate and you're not pitching, like, those two things are completely separate individuals, completely separate skill sets, completely separate coaches. But right now, you're not getting anything from either one of them. And I think that's when it gets alarming a little bit, that it's both of those completely separate units.
Yep.
And it's through multiple games now. It's not just one game. And real quick, Tyler, yesterday, the runs allowed per inning for South Carolina, because this is 24 runs in a 7-inning game,
mm-hmm.
and because Auburn is the home team, they didn't have to bat in the seventh.
Six innings.
Think about that.
Yeah.
6 innings. So Auburn does not score in the first. The next 4 innings, they score 5, 7, 3, and 9. 9 a game in each inning. So I think that's, again, I don't even know how you put into words how that happens. You know, Brandon Stone, who has been, you know, pretty good for this team at times.
Yep.
8 runs, all earned. Tyler Pitzer, who, you know, has pitched a lot of innings for this team at times. 10 earned runs in an inning and a third. I mean, it's in 6 innings that Auburn was at the plate, you allowed 24 runs.
And again, we've heard Maneri multiple times this week double down, saying, "Hey, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not giving up after 1 year." And again, it'd be a huge buyout, so it's unlikely that he gets fired. But you do have to start asking questions of, okay, what happens with assistants, Terry Rooney, Monty Lee? Because again, it's pitching and hitting that are struggling. So where do you make changes? Do you make changes at both spots? You know, does it happen after the season is over? Does it happen after this weekend? I don't know. But if Maneri's not going anywhere, it's very unlikely this entire coaching staff stays intact the way that it is, because that just should not happen and doesn't happen in baseball.
I mean, I think the question you're asking is fair. I also think it's fair to say we don't really know. Like, speaking for myself only, I haven't heard, hey, there's going to be shakeups. Like typically when you have a season that goes this poorly, things change in a program. Now, what are those? I don't know. Paul Maneri has pointed to, you know, he said the other day publicly, hey, recruiting's going really well. We'll see, right? But are there any other changes to the program? It stands to reason that there could be, but will there be? I don't know. And I think, you know, as we sit here, guys, it seems like this is going to be a shorter than usual season for South Carolina. And so maybe we get some of those answers more quickly than you typically do. I don't have them sitting here, but with what we've seen, the product that we've seen, especially lately, but throughout the course of this season, something's got to give. Some things have to change. And I don't think it's just, hey, recruit, right? Like, yes, that's a huge component of it, but what else is it to get this thing turned around? And that's going to be the question that dominates this offseason.
Still at least 7 more games to play. Doubleheader today against Auburn gets rolling at 2 o'clock because of weather this weekend, moving things around a little bit. Pre-game coverage starting at 1:45 on the game here in Columbia and 100.3 the game out in Myrtle Beach. Coach Beamer spoke last night once again at another Welcome Home event, this one up in Greenville. We'll get his thoughts on some changes in college football that might be on the horizon. Coming up next is the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs here on the game.
I saw that. I was reading some of that coming up here today on my phone, just some information about it. I don't know enough about it. I think if you're looking for anyone to spearhead change or be in a leadership position when it comes to college football going forward, he's the first person that would come to mind from my standpoint. I know a lot of people would say the same. So don't know enough about it, but all for it.
Welcome back in. It is the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs. Tyler West and Chris with you on your Friday. That, of course, was Coach Beamer last night at the Welcome Home event up in Greenville that Chris was at when posed the question on his thoughts on Nick Saban being on the president's new college football commission, which is set to analyze the sport and try and find fixes in all the different areas that obviously need a lot of fixing. I think we can all agree, much like Beamer said, there may not be a better person in that position to do that kind of thing and try and get some of these things under control, if at all possible.
Yeah.
Well, many people.
Go ahead, Chris.
Many people have said that, you know, Nick Saban could run for office and be elected and possibly easily. And I don't blame him. It doesn't seem he has a lot of interest in doing that. But if he can do something kind of in the political realm somewhat by being on a political commission that's going to hopefully solve some issues in college football, that makes sense, right? A lot of people have said, man, I wish Nick Saban was, you know, the college football commissioner, the college football czar. Hey, if the NCAA goes away and there's some new college football organization, how about Nick Saban? He's a guy that's got tons of – something that we need, frankly, is more people with experience in these matters talking about these things. And that's not to say that I agree with everything that Nick Saban's ever said about NIL or the transfer portal, or that he would have, you know, everybody in agreement with him. But, you know, right now, like, you, if you look back, guys, at a lot of the things, you know, everybody's waiting on a congressional bill, or a lot of people are. Unlikely to happen. Maybe it will one day, but it's a lot of arguing back and forth. If you listen to some of the hearings, if you hear some of the things that are said, your first reaction is frequently, that's way off. They don't understand what's going on. Nick Saban at least has an understanding. He's been in the game for what? He was in the game for 50 years. He's still around it. He still knows a lot of people. And so supposedly the people that have been reported are Nick Saban and then a businessman who's a big Texas Tech supporter who sold his company for, I think, $4 billion at some point recently. I don't know much about him, but I do know it makes me feel better that if all this happens and, you know, what the committee looks like, I'm with Beamer. I don't really know other than much of what I've read. But Nick Saban's a pretty good mind to have in that room if you're talking about restructuring some things with college football. Now, my next question is, what's the structure? Like, how do these things get accomplished? And I think that's my biggest question.
Well, and does Saban and this committee, like, do they have the power to actually enact these changes too? Yes. I think. And Saban still, I think, very much old school in some ways. And so it certainly makes sense on the surface to say, hey, if there's somebody who should be involved in this, it should be Nick Saban. And, you know, he obviously knows the game incredibly well inside, you know, and out, like in terms of all the kind of different things that affect the game that we all love. Well, all right, you can come up with a lot of different plans, but at this point, the players have so much power. Are the players going to agree to it, or is this just going to create another lawsuit situation? I think that's the, on the surface, yeah, great. We would all love to just see things get solidified, I think is the best way to say it. I don't even know if we're even that worried anymore about what exactly it looks like. We just want for there to be some continuity. And, you know, you look, I'm looking at a headline right now. My guy Ross Dellinger, who is the best reporter out there, in my opinion. Hey, growing support from the Big Ten and the SEC for a potential 16-team college football playoff. So, another... This would have been a bombshell report, and now we don't even blink an eye because everything just changes. So, you know, South Carolina would have been in the playoff this past season if we had this structure potentially.
Yep.
But obviously they weren't with this past structure. So it's just – there's just so much that I think fans are just overwhelmed with all the change.
And Chris, you wanted to bring this up, this article by Pete Nakos, which does reference this college football commission in part of it. Because, yeah, the NIL stuff, that's its own, you know, animal that's going to probably take a while to wrangle if they're able to do that. But it does seem like the transfer portal is something that's a little more obtainable and getting to more of a good position. And there's a lot of, you know, support around moving to just a January window as opposed to having December and April like we've been doing these past handful of years, and kind of just trying to get things more in line that coaches can all agree makes their lives a little bit easier.
Well, you know, even that begs the question, though, what is the structure, right? So the American Football Coaches Association can vote, which they already did vote, and proposed, let's have one window, and let's push it to January. Okay, and you might look at that and say, great, great solution. You know, you can agree or disagree with it. Let's say you do. How do you do it, right? Right now, we're in a structure where it's done through litigation. The NCAA can change the rules, but they've been forced to change the rules because of court rulings. And I feel like I'm getting almost annoying talking about all this, but there's so many different issues. There's the playoff, like you said, Wes. There's the transfer portal. There's NIL. There's conference. There's all these things. How do you put it all together to where we're not having to constantly address all these things, where they're constantly changing, where we have a plan, and then a court says, actually, that plan doesn't work, or that plan does work. Now you got to change your rules, NCAA. And I go back to this. We got to have a bargaining structure. If you have a bargaining structure, then you can say, all right, if you know, if you have a one-year NIL deal and it runs through the spring, you can't renegotiate your NIL deal. It's a deal. If a school offers you one, great, but you're not leaving to go to another team during the spring window. Or you can say, hey, we're going to have one portal window. Or you can say, here's what the college football playoff looks like. Like, I feel like if you bring it all under an umbrella and it's all done where both sides have to agree, there's going to be some give and take. But it's not going to be just give. It's not going to be just take. That's how it has to be done. So, you know, I don't know if that's how it's going to be done. I'm skeptical that we can get a bill. I'm even skeptical, guys, if this committee ended up saying, hey, the president of the United States is just going to do this by executive order. Those get tied up in courts, too. You know, we need to try as much as possible to get the courts out of this thing. Courts can be good for a lot of things. They're not good for this. And so we got to have some type of structure. What that is, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm with you. And the portal inevitably gets tied back into NIL because the argument becomes, well, but if there's not some type of bargaining agreement, the argument becomes you have now kept me from being able to earn more money because the guys are making bank in these portal windows. So yep. If you say, hey, you can't have a spring portal window, which I think on the surface, if we're just putting on our common sense hat, makes a lot of sense for the sport. Like, hey, if you agree to a deal that's going to carry you through the rest of the year during that first portal window, you can't enter the portal in the spring.
That's right.
You know, and I think that even maybe passes the common sense test a little bit more than just saying there's not going to be a spring portal window. Because what about the people who go through spring, they don't have deals, and then they just realize, hey, I'm not going to play. Like, I still have a spot for those guys, I think, to be able to move along to somewhere else where they can play. But for the people who got deals and got paid, something has to be planned out and agreed to where, all right, we're not even at the point of three-year deals, which I think is ideal. But at least make the one-year deal mean something and hold up.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. A lot of things to be cleaned up, hopefully, in the near future when it comes to college football, but easier said than done, obviously. We'll get back in the softball conversation coming up next. Brad Muller going to join us and discuss South Carolina softball falling last night and looking ahead to the NCAA tournament. It is the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs here in the game. Welcome back in. It is the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs. Tyra West and Chris along with you on your Friday here on the game. Time to get back in the softball conversation. Joining us now on Love Chevrolet phone lines is our guy, Brad Muller. Brad, first of all, appreciate you taking your time as always. Talked about the top of the show. Obviously not fun last night, falling 12-4 in five innings to a Texas A&M, though they are the number one team in the country. But it's obviously a good thing when you can kind of shake off a loss like that, knowing you still got a lot more softball to play in the more important tournament with the NCAA coming up next week.
Yeah, if anything we've seen from this team in Coach Chastain Woodard's first year is they are very resilient any time, especially in any kind of series where they lost the opener, especially in a run rule fashion or something like that, they've always bounced back. So, you know, sometimes you have an aberration. This is a very good defensive team. I think they were second best in the SEC in fielding percentage going into the SEC tournament, and they kicked it around five times last night, which is, you know, just unlike them. So, you have nights like that, and when you play, a top five team and a number one team in the country, they're going to make you pay. But, you know, the exciting thing for this team is not only are they going to the NCAA tournament, but they should be a regional host, which is a big deal.
Hey, Brad, it's Wes. Appreciate you hopping on with this. Obviously, it seems like they've done more than enough, like you said, to be a regional host. I've been tracking on Softball America their projections for, a top eight. At one point this week, they had South Carolina 9, LSU 8. This morning, they actually have them flipped, South Carolina 8, LSU 9. So, obviously, kind of right on that bubble for that top eight seed. Do you? And I know it's not in a vacuum either, but do you think they've done enough? Have you heard any buzz around the program kind of for the expectation of if they could get maybe that final top eight seed, or do you think this is going to be a regional host instead?
You know, it's one of those things that, if you can use the on the bubble term for that, I think what you just outlined clearly shows that they're on that bubble to be one of the, if not the last, overall host if they do go out of regionals to host super regional. Their resume is one of the strongest in the country in terms of their strength of the schedule, their quad one wins, their lack of bad losses. They don't really have a ton of bad losses. They haven't lost to anybody, I believe, below quad one. I think they have either first or second for the most wins and games played against ranked teams. So, they hit all the marks. And plus, a 40-win season, which is usually a huge benchmark, especially considering the schedule they played. They hit all the marks where they have a terrific argument. So if they get it, it's going to be hard to say they didn't deserve it. If they don't get it, the problem is you have a lot of teams in the SEC with very similar resumes in terms of being a top eight seed. And it's just how many are you going to give from the same conference, even if they deserve it. But it's going to be close. One of the things they're going to look at, too, that they always look at is recency, such as the last 2 weeks or last 10 games. I think South Carolina's 6-4 maybe in their last 10 games. The second to last week of the regular season, they had a bad weekend where they lost a series at Auburn, which I think kind of hurt them a little bit. If they win that series, win one more game, I think then it's a little more solid. But I think they went 6-4 down the stretch. Not terrible. They're right on that bubble. But having seen them played all year, I'm excited for the potential of this team in the postseason, and certainly playing at home where they've played much better, like most teams do. All season long, that would certainly give them an advantage. But, I think it's just going to come down to the wire. It's just going to be that close.
Brad, it's Chris. Thanks for taking time for us today. And, to your point, when you're looking over the Softball America, and they are projections, right? But generally, they're going to be in the ballpark. Seven of the top eight seeds are from the SEC, and then eight of the top 10 are in the SEC. So, of course, a murderer's row in this conference. And that leads me to this question. Let's zoom out and go to kind of the beginning of this season. And now we've seen what South Carolina has accomplished in Coach Chastain Woodard's first year. Has this team surpassed even your expectations with what they've done this year to where we're sitting here, first 2 weeks in May talking about the potential of a top eight seed in the best conference in the country?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure the coaching staff would tell you, no, this is what they expected. And, because they know better than all of us. They see these kids every day, in the off season and all that. But, yeah, you didn't really know what to expect going into this year because, okay, it's a new coaching staff. It's a very new team. You had so many transfers in, and most of those transfers came from, mid-major programs, for lack of a better word, and you weren't sure if they would be able to play at that level, every weekend in the SEC. Well, it turns out, they pretty much could. A lot of those kids that transferred from mid-majors were starters and were significant contributors. You did have Quincy Lelio, who's the leadoff hitter that transferred from Oklahoma, that didn't play much at Oklahoma. That's why she came here. She turns into a terrific leadoff hitter that, has, been a terrific table setters. And you have all the Charlotte transfers that came with Coach. that proved they could play at this level. They're really good. You know, when you're looking at the likes of Ariana Rohde, who broke the school single season home run record, you know, in her first season here. Lexi Winters has been outstanding behind the plate and also very good with the bat. In fact, she may be the most improved player. She was not known as a hitter when she came from Charlotte, but she had her highest career batting average, I think, here playing in the SEC. Abigail Knight was another starter that was a Charlotte transfer, as well as Ella Chansey. All of those, I think four of the six transfers from Charlotte were all in the starting lineup, and all four of them hit over 300 this year. And then you had Sam Gress, who was just really kind of the heart and soul of this team from a pitching standpoint. Not numbers that are going to wow you, but she just most of the time got the job done. And she makes a lot of appearances, got knocked around a little bit last night, which is going to happen, you know, from time to time when you throw as often as she does. But she really put this team on her back, whether as a starter or as a, you know, coming out of the bullpen. It's just been really a lot of fun to watch this team come together. You know, you had a few kids that came back from last year, and then but with all these transfers, great team chemistry. They all get along. They're good kids, and you know, for the most part, they play good ball. You know, again, last night I thought was an aberration with all the errors, but they play fundamentally well. They're not a team that's going to hit a ton of home runs overall other than Rohde, but they hit a lot of doubles, and they're a fun team to watch. So, yeah, to me, I think they way exceeded expectations. A 40-win season and a winning record in conference, it's only the second time it's happened in 22 years.
Again, talking Gamecock softball with our guy Brad Muller. I've got about a little over 2 minutes here. The benefit of being bounced in the second or the quarterfinals of the SEC tournament is you do get a couple extra days rest. Where do you stand on the extra days rest as opposed to momentum riding through playing maybe deeper into this weekend?
You can work it any way you want to. You know, the rest doesn't matter as much as it does in baseball, let's say for the pitchers and things like that, because as you know, in softball, you know, you could have the same pitcher pitch 3 days in a row if you need to, you know, because of the less wear and tear on the arm. I think at this point in the season, it's not a terrible thing for them. You can refocus on things. You know, at some point, everybody hits that wall. I think offensively, they'd kind of hit a wall the last couple weeks of the season, and you saw them kind of starting to snap out of it the last game of the Alabama series this past weekend and the first game in the SEC tournament, where some of those kids that were maybe struggling to get hits to drop, they were starting to get hits to drop for them again. So, you know, at this point, there's nothing wrong after playing whatever they played, 55 games, of having a couple of extra days where you're not doing anything softball related just to, you know, refresh and all that. If they did go on a bigger run in the SEC tournament, yeah, you could certainly spin it the other way. Hey, we did this. But, you know, they've been playing SEC teams, basically ranked teams every weekend, three games a week, you know. So they are used to tough competition, and you know, they're not going to see anything stronger in the regional than you know, that they haven't already seen, you know, in an SEC weekend, because they've played top 25 basically every weekend.
Is Brad Muller, appreciate your insight as always. I'm sure we'll have plenty more conversations hopefully over the next couple weeks in terms of how deep this team can go in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, thanks so much. I hope folks will get out, you know, when they do announce that they get a regional bid, they'll get out there and watch them, because it's been a really fun team.
Absolutely. Thanks as always, Brad.
Alrighty.
All right, Brad Muller joining us on the Love Chevrolet phone lines. We'll come back and wrap up the day and the week. Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs on your Friday here on The Game. Welcome back in. Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs. Tyler West and Chris along with you for a couple more minutes here. Again, we are a long way away from the football season starting, still over 100 days, but when it gets here, it gets rolling, and before you know it, we'll be at rivalry week. Waiting for South Carolina to take on Clemson, this time at Williams-Brice Stadium. But the day before that, we've got a pretty fun Black Friday that's coming together. Last year, you had the Egg Bowl, and Georgia and Georgia Tech as the nightcap. They played that wild 8-overtime game. You're going to get those same games once again this year, but the nightcap this time, Texas and Texas A&M in Austin at 7:30 on ABC. So a full day. You're going to get Egg Bowl at noon, likely Georgia and Georgia Tech at 3:30, and then the nightcap again, Texas and Texas A&M, to round out day one of rivalry week before we get, obviously, the full slate of games, including South Carolina and Clemson on Saturday as well. Pretty excited about this.
You're already excited about it?
Already excited. I love rivalry week.
I appreciate your commitment, Tyler.
I mean, somebody brought it up on the show the other day. How can you not be romantic about baseball? Same with college football. I'm already looking forward to that. But, you know, Tyler, your question. I actually, what's week zero look like this year?
Ooh.
The week that does not exist, according to Wes Mitchell.
Yeah, Wes, you shut your mic off. You're not allowed to talk about this. I will.
But do we have something worth talking about?
We have some week
Please
zero
leave
stuff.
The room.
Let me get it going here.
So the technical, you know, that would be Saturday, August 23rd, correct?
Correct.
That'd be your week zero.
Yep. We got a couple
four
things.
Games. You have actually a bunch of games on that Thursday. I don't see anything that immediately jumps out unless you think, you know, Nebraska at Cincinnati is an incredible game, but not anything great, Wes. Here you go. Let's just get you to revisit just to make sure that you're not interested.
Okay.
Stanford at Hawaii.
Wait, hold on. Give me your on 1 to 10 for every game that he says. Give me your interest level.
Stanford in Hawaii?
Yep.
At
Hawaii.
2.
2.
Okay, 2. I'm actually surprised it was that high. Kansas State at Iowa State in Ireland?
3.
3 points for Ireland only. Fresno State at Kansas?
2. 1.
And by the way, there's no way this is right. The little tickets as low as thing on ESPN's
also
schedule
two.
Here. Tickets as low as $179. Like not $1.79, $179 for the Kansas game.
Well, Kansas got the new stadium or the upgrades to the stadium, so maybe that's why.
I don't care what they're playing.
People
in.
Are
I don't
excited
really...
about Lance Leipold out on the you know in the Midwest.
I guess so. David Booth Memorial Stadium. Okay, so Wes, that was a 2.
Yeah.
And then this one may take the cake. Sam Houston, the Bearcats with a K, right, Tyler?
That's correct.
At Western Kentucky.
Wow. Yep. Set the DVR now. 1.
Not excited about the Bearcats and the Hilltoppers?
Nobody got a 0, so that's...
I didn't know. Yeah. I thought it was 1 to 10.
I will tune in lightly and have those on in the background, but I think I'm kind of with you on the week zero this year.
Am I the only true sicko here that's going to watch all these games?
Guys, if I'm going to have a steak for dinner, the appetizer has got to be good. And if a place doesn't have good appetizers, I'm not ordering an appetizer.
Yeah, but so, even if the appetizer isn't good, you know the entree is likely going to be better. You just got to wait longer for it.
I have no desire for a bad appetizer to start my experience.
Well, the good news, Wes, is yes, Tyler, that rivalry week slate that you just laid out is incredible, but the actual week one of the season, I mean, Alabama at Florida State, like for the intrigue factor, you know, like can Florida State be half decent this year is interesting. Hey, you've also got LSU at Clemson. You've got Texas at Ohio State. How about that one? Like, there's some good games in that first week that'll make it worth watching, I think.
And you know, something we haven't really talked a whole lot about, and again, we still got over 100 days to get there. The fact that South Carolina and Virginia Tech are playing on Sunday, we don't have a kick time yet. I'm assuming that's going to be like 3:30 on ABC because Notre Dame and you know Miami are going to play that night at 7:30. Yep. I mean, you on opening weekend of college football, you get a true standalone game in the middle of the day, and again, everybody's starving for any kind of football they can get their hands on. You're going to be the center of focus for 3.5-4 hours on that Sunday before Notre Dame and Miami play that night. That's pretty cool for this program to get to do that right off the jump against a cool opponent in Virginia Tech.
Yeah, now, while I am anti week zero, I actually do love the first weekend that you get now, the Saturday. Sunday. Do we have a Monday game this year too?
I know the TCU last TCU in North Carolina.
Yeah, the last few years. I mean,
Chapel Bill's debut.
Well, and we'll see if his girlfriend is allowed on the sideline or not. Based on the reporting today, that she's not allowed in the facility. She may have to use the Connor Stallions style of sneaking in. But I'm all for that. It reminds me for South Carolina a little bit of during the Spurrier era, they were able to snag those Thursday slots to start the year. And we don't see as much hype about the Thursday games as maybe we once did, but I always thought, especially as that program was trying to get off the ground, grabbing the spotlight on that Thursday and kind of, I don't even think they had week zero then.
So
that was kind of the actual kickoff of the season. You had all eyes on you, and this will be another chance, against also not a marquee national team, but another Power Four program, and but also a very winnable game, a game you're going to be favored in.
I am anti-neutral site games in week one. I would much rather this game be here in Columbia or up road in Blacksburg. Like, please don't put this in a sterile NFL stadium.
Did you see they did Enter Sandman live?
We had a Virginia Tech guy on the other day who was going to the concert that night. That is one of the coolest things I've ever seen. And, yeah, 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10, yeah. Me and Tyler are in agreement on this. And you're good on the Sunday games?
I love
Monday
it.
Games?
Just put them on campus and not neutral sites. That's my only gripe.
So, I'm with you.
Yeah, only 100 and some odd days until we get there. That'll do it for the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs. Coming up next, halftime show. Myself and Jack Felci, abbreviated version, because Gamecock baseball does actually have to play games today starting at 2 o'clock. That's up next here on the game.
All right, Tyler, later, man.